Presenting a proven way to build your endowment with a sustainable gift planning program, this is the Gift Planning Development Podcast, an ongoing forum designed to help you meet all of your gift planning goals.
Welcome to the Gift Planning Development Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Tumalo, CEO of Gift Planning Development, and I'm so excited to have back in our studio, Ben Lee. Ben is the regional director of Make-A-Wish, the Susquehanna Valley, Pennsylvania chapter.
That's right. But I think today I am Reverend Ben Lee as
Reverend.
I'm sitting here.
I beg your pardon, Your Eminence.
Well, just Your Holiness is fine.
Your Holiness. I'm kissing his ring as we speak.
Yes.
So, Ben, you are a man of many, many talents, and for such a young guy, a lot of life experience. Relative to this podcast, I thought it would be interesting to chat about. You are an
I am currently an ordained minister. Unordained meant something went terribly wrong.
You used to be, but they kicked you out.
I am an ordained minister in the church, have been for more than a decade, have been a pastor for about 15 years.
A lot easier when you just tell the audience what you do. But you've been all of you in Alaska, Kansas City, right?
Yeah, pastor churches, those two states, Ohio, and I'm very active in my church today here in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania.
Beautiful. And we did a great podcast recently. People can check that out on our site as well. That was well received. And you and I got to talking about fundraising in churches, right? And I'm a member of a church, and I've helped them build a planned giving program.
Very nice.
As part of my volunteer commitment to them. Yeah. And it's going okay. It could be going a lot better, but everybody's busy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think that's the big thing is they're generally church people aren't trained fundraisers and they're really busy.
Yes.
And even as a volunteer, I'm like, I'll help out, but I can only do so much.
Mm-hmm.
So I know there are some things in your experience that make you think about, boy, what can maybe we as fundraisers or board members, whatever our role might be at our church, synagogue, whatever, that we can maybe help our clergy to be better fundraisers. Is that a fair question?
You know, and I couldn't imagine how happy I would have been if during my years in pastoral ministry, someone who works at a nonprofit in a fundraising role knocked on my door, sat across from me and said, "Hey, Pastor Ben, I've got a couple of notes for you. I've been paying attention and I think we can increase the tithes and offerings. Would you like to hear them?" I would probably have fallen out of my chair in gratitude.
Mm-hmm.
And so my hope is that the end result of this conversation, one, our audience might think about their own fundraising work better with more clarity. And maybe if they belong to a faith community, might have some impetus to get involved and benefit that community as they seek to do good work in the world. You know, there's just so much baggage or so much complexity that pastors have around the idea of money and fundraising. Maybe we have the words of Jesus in our ears who said, nobody can serve two masters.
Mm.
And you've got the infamous mammon out there, which represents greed and desire and the lust for more. And then you have spiritual piety. And you have Christian virtue. And I think pastors are very uncomfortable around the issue of money. And churches are no different than nonprofits. They're entirely dependent upon staying supported by the free will offerings of their constituency. And a nonprofit will shut its doors. And as we can see up and down the street, churches will sometimes be forced to do the same thing. And I know when I was a pastor, I struggled making much of the importance of giving. Now, on one hand, it's a lot easier because when you're a pastor, you can stand in the pulpit and say, God wants you to give. In the work that you and I do Monday through Friday, we don't have quite a platform to stand on and can't speak with as much authority, can we?
Mm.
I wish I could tell my donors, you need to give because God wants you to give. That would make my job a lot easier.
Disregard my Lamborghini in your driveway, but yes.
Yes, unfortunately, we have to take a different approach. So on one hand, I think, as you said a couple minutes ago to me before we started recording, good is the enemy of great. And because people do feel a very internal obligation to support their churches, probably more of an obligation than even supporting our nonprofits, that you can be good or even less than good and keep the lights on if you're a church. But I also think that a lot of ministers or professionals in the church may want to do better than good. And I think it's possible. But I think it requires rethinking a lot about how we approach money. You know, one of the biggest surprising facets to me is there's a lot of pastors who, on principle, make it their business not to know who in the church gives what. Hmm. They just don't want to know. And you can probably understand a little bit where the thought process comes in behind that.
I'm not sure.
Well, maybe you're intentional about not wanting to show favoritism. The Bible does speak a lot about people that might come in and has a nice cart, not car, and nice clothes, and you can tell, okay, and then not giving those people preferential treatment, say, around a banquet table. A lot of concerns and warnings around that kind of behavior. So you want to treat everybody equally as persons. But as fundraisers, as people that are responsible for raising money for an organization, we know that we don't treat our constituents as equal donors. We know that the best, most efficient, fruitful, responsible use of our time is to treat a small percentage of our constituent base with the greatest percentage of our available time, focus, and energy. And that's not unfair. It's not belittling anybody else's contribution, but it's being most accountable to our responsibility to accomplish the mission. So I would always encourage pastors, you need to know who's giving. You need to know who has stopped giving, who's giving more. And if you want to get spiritual about it, I would say there's no better barometer to a person's heart than when giving starts to decrease or slide. It's an opportunity to step in pastorally and say to a family, I noticed your giving has been dropping off. Are things okay at work? Mm. Are there concerns or expenses at home that maybe the church could come alongside you and know? If somebody's giving goes up, it's an observation that something maybe about the heart or their external circumstances has been in motion and is evolving. And that's the kind of information you would want to know too.
Did you have any training in seminary around this topic, fundraising?
No. A lot of conversations around financial integrity. If you're a pastor and you want to get fired, it's probably going to be not because of bad preaching, but probably around sexual immorality or financial irresponsibility. So we did a lot of conversations about how to manage money well, but never to fundraise or solicit donations well. I've come to think about the concept of a Sunday worship service, if we're talking about a church setting, almost as an event that a nonprofit might have. You have attendees that come, the chance to share the mission in a compelling way is given, and every event people are given an opportunity to give. But as you said, and as I would also agree, I don't think there's a lot of intentional thank you or back-end follow-up that accompanies most gifts given in churches. I know as a pastor, it really wasn't in my job description or in my habit to write notes of gratitude to somebody who I know clearly made a stretch gift that was costly to them. And in your own life, I don't know if you've received too many acknowledgments for gifts you've given outside maybe of the annual letter that you probably get.
No, and I'm not disparaging my church.
No, your church is probably 100% average. and that's not a critique either.
No. And I think it's the expectation set that we don't, either they're not trained or there's no expectation that we are donors, right? We're not just members, we are donors. And like to your point, they should be thanked. I mean, can you imagine giving a donation to anybody else and not getting a thank you? Are you ever going to give another gift? Probably not, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe not. Most likely you won't.
Yeah, there's something about the church environment that does allow a fundraiser minister to be pretty subpar and have the dollar still coming in. But I think there's ways to do better and to be more intentional about it. I think if I were to step back in a ministry and was responsible for a church again, I would probably host a dinner for maybe the 10 or 12 most significant donors in our church.
be careful with that word, significant, right? Because they're all significant.
They're all, thank you very much. Very good.
To correct you, Your Eminence. So significant, you mean
in terms of
wealthier?
Wealthier. Right. And folks that are clearly bearing the majority of the burden for meeting the responsibilities of the church financially.
Well said.
And I would, I think, go out of my way to honor the contributions of those people, thank them, and let them know how much the church benefits from and is dependent upon the way in which they are obedient in their giving. And I think if you had asked me 5 years ago, I would have cringed at that idea. I think it would have felt wrong. But I don't think that was very wise in the moment to think that way.
So that's a great takeaway as we wrap up here for the clergy folk, right? Mm-hmm. Is to, can we kind of recap on the if we have clergy folk listening now, what are some takeaways for them?
Make yourself aware of who is giving what. And don't mask what might even be so bold as to be called irresponsibility with piety. Do the work. Know who your donors are. Be aware of giving patterns within your congregation. That has pretty valuable and profound both spiritual and practical application. Great. And for a lot of ministers, that would be a great starting point.
Send a thank you. My simple default to a lot of things is just send a simple thank you handwritten note, right? Mm-hmm. So once in a while, send out some thank you notes to some donors, right?
Yeah, it would never have crossed my mind in the ministry to write somebody a note after receiving what was clearly for them a major gift.
Right. Even if it was $100.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Because it's not the amount. And I think that's an important distinction just to add this on at the end here. Yeah. In the church world, we would look at the sacrifice that a person was making, even if it was a widow putting two mites into an offering. Joe, if you remember your Sunday school lesson.
No.
Jesus commended the gift of that woman more so than anyone who was giving large gifts, because she gave not out of her abundance, but gave out of her very self and her very center. And I think we can honor those kind of gifts when we see them.
And then for the, I'd love that. That's a good thing to end on, but I just wanted to get a couple takeaways for if our listeners who may be board members, church council, fundraisers at a church, any takeaways for them that we talked about?
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm going to say I have not done this. I'm going to give some advice that I have not done.
And the best kind.
That is. And now I've got the burden of responsibility to follow up with this, is to go to your pastor. And undoubtedly that fundraisers have extraordinary insight and wisdom and perspective that the church just doesn't have the time to put their head above water and consider. And maybe it's the giving cards that are in front of the pews. Maybe it's the way the offering is facilitated. If you thought, you know, you only have one guy going down the aisle with the basket, and if you had two, that would guarantee the basket was actually passing in front of everybody. And you can think through, like a fundraiser does, the nuts and bolts and the mechanics. You can think through the way the church does send out the annual giving letter. All these factors, we think about that. We have ideas. I would encourage everybody listening to knock on the door of their faith community and say, pastor, priest, rabbi, imam, do you have 5 minutes? I'd like to share some ideas, and I can guarantee you'll be their hero that day.
Beautiful. And start that planned giving program if you don't have one.
Oh, yeah, you should take a minute and just say a word about that, because I can guarantee you, as a pastor for 15 years, had never heard the word planned giving, didn't know what it meant, wouldn't have even had a concept of somebody leaving us in their will. But you helped your church start that.
I did, and we came up with a name, Living Water Society.
Okay.
Wanted to come up with a name that connotated, is that the right word? Is that the right word? Connotated?
Yeah.
Connotated. Longevity, sustaining, energy, thriving,
right?
Living Water Society. Of course, Lorraine and I remember, so we joined the society. My first recommendation, anybody starting a legacy society, join it yourself, right? And then just started putting it out there to the church members. So occasionally, periodically, I will get up at the services and do a quick plug for the program. And that always contains a compelling why we're doing this, why it's important for everyone to consider it. Always encourage them to think about what the church means to them and what the future looks like to them. I talk about how easy it can be to do something simple, right? And then there's a call to action. If you would like to have a conversation with me or one of the pastors, no obligation. I'm doing this as a volunteer. I don't sell insurance. I do this for a living, but my role here is strictly as a volunteer and because I care about the program. And every time I do that, I'll get at least one, sometimes two people come up after service and say, I want to talk to you. I've been thinking about doing this. I've been thinking about doing something else. So it works. And it's just about being intentional and keep showing up and stuff.
No, I'm curious, when you first broached that subject with your pastor, did he, I think he, have any familiarity with the concept, or were they kind of deer in the headlights?
No, they had familiarity, and they were incredibly grateful for my taking the initiative. And I had some help with one of our finance directors, an older gentleman who knows a lot of people. He's been incredibly helpful. So another advice is to try to get somebody else, church committee member, somebody, finance person, to help you do it. But they were incredibly grateful that they started it. And I've already had a conversation with the one pastor about whether she wants to be a part of it. So yeah, again, it's just showing up. And every time I just bring it up, somebody comes up and...
Living Waters is a great name. If someone was listening, could they borrow that name? Living Waters
Society? I Googled it, honestly. I Googled something Bible, sustainability, thriving, and it came up John, from the book of John, Living Waters. I'm like, that's it?
Yeah.
So yeah, I always recommend with clients, try to be creative, if you can, with the name of your legacy society.
Okay.
Now yours is Make-A-Wish.
We are across the nation, the Legacy of Wishes.
Legacy of Wishes.
Which is probably not scoring too high on the creative side, but scores high on the clarity side.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. And speaking of Make-A-Wish, any plug you want to put in for Make-A-Wish?
Well, I know you have a national audience, and if anyone's listening, they can go anywhere around the country to wish.org, and Make-A-Wish grants the wishes of children with life-threatening medical conditions in every county in America.
Thank you very much. It's an amazing organization.
Yeah.
Thanks again, as always, for your great talent and time.
My pleasure, Joe.
Thank you for listening to the Gift Planning Development Podcast. For more information on any of the topics you've heard about today, please go to giftplanningdevelopment.com.